Now we're going to sit again, and then there'll be time right before lunch for some general questions about this practice. We're going to start with if we could put up on the screen the refuges, please. All right, so we're going to do these refuges as kind of remembering them from other retreats and other times. And I will say them out loud, and I would ask you to say them with me, but keep yourself silenced. And for those of you who are new to this, this is aligning ourselves. This is a kind of aligning, going for refuge. And the idea of the refuge, when our aspiration can get us to be relating to something that our ego at this point in time can't do. And we get reactive in the ego, but if we take refuge in the Buddha, then we are somewhat or dramatically protected from that reactivity of our mind, of our habits, our impulses in this way. I sat with Pax Sayadaw for a month, and he asked that we start by staying one-pointed for an hour. And there was only this one-pointedness. And the only way I could do that, because that's not my style of practice, it comes, my style is naturally arising, one-pointedness. But to do that, what I would do is I would take refuge in the Buddha and the Dhamma and the Sangha. And I just took refuge in the Buddha, and that wasn't enough to last for an hour. So as I then I took Buddha and Dhamma, and then the it was only when I took refuge in all three that I could stay one-pointed for an hour. Again, I wasn't really that interested in developing that skill quite that way, but that made it harder for me to do. But this is what allowed that. Okay. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami, Dhammam saranam gacchami, Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. In this refuge, this afternoon, we will do a series of renunciations related just to this practice. But in this refuge, we reflect for a moment about what in the way of practice qualities we would care about in terms of the precepts, these ways that we want to be while we're on retreat. And the one I would have you first focus on, because you're in the home environment, is your relationship with silence, because you have to talk to your family and things. So how do you, what is the right kind of silence for you on this retreat? How do I keep this silence that sometimes it's got to be in the form of wise speech, That just so we're taking this, that we're taking, we're, when we're here, you're in your room by yourself now, but other times you're with other members of your family, or you're having to go out for food or whatever. How do you keep this inner silence through wise speech? Because the violence of speech gets us, that takes us away from silence. We can be speaking and be quite silent inside at the same time. It's always there. It's just like everything else. We're just finding it. So that's what I, in terms of the precepts, and then non-harming with the speech, non-harming to yourself in inner speech, non-harming. So don't take something from yourself. Don't deny yourself something in the way of practice as the way you might think about the precept for now. In this way, because then you just take one precept and you're exploring it in this situation, and it gets more refined, more subtle. Before we begin the arriving sequence, reflecting on our motivation for practice. It's said we come to the Dhamma through our experience of dukkha, or our experience of anicca, or our experience of anatta. This dukkha meaning the discomfort, dissatisfaction, unreliability in this world of opposites, typically translated as suffering. But that's English suffering is too narrow really to capture it. Or we come through this, everything's always changing. Where is my point where there is stability? Where is there something that I find that has everlasting kind of qualities in this ever-changing world? How do I relate to it? How am I in relation to the world as described in the Four Noble Truths and this, the Buddha's teaching of the worldly winds, that we're in the world of opposites? How do we relate? And then for others, it's that when we look, we can't find a there. Like if you take apart the automobile and you say, well, where is the automobile here? Is it in the wheels? Is it in the tires, in the seats, in the steering wheel? What constitutes an automobile? And it turns out that the automobile is a relatedness of parts. The automobile functions as that relatedness, and it gets us places. It's a vehicle. So it is with ourself. We can't find in the parts something that represents the self, but in the wholeness and its relatedness to this realm, we can find something that we can rely on, and that is what the Buddha discovered. And so our motivation here is to find what word would you use? First word. Now another word. And another word. Now say the three of them together, one after the other. Thank you. Those are your immediately available, just spontaneously arising motivation. And so you arrive You're not arriving from blankness, but from wholesomeness. This is more important than you may realize. You are beginning in a directional alignment. We get specific later on, but you start out directionally aligned. In your daily life, you can do this repeatedly in a day. It will bring you into these qualities of humility and dignity and integrity. Your motivation is not dependent on the conditions of your life, but rather this motivation is there in all conditions as they arise. Is that always true now? No. But aspirationally, yes. That is what allows your daily life to become your monastery. And so we arrive here now. More silence because you've done this. So I'm giving more silence. Arriving, arriving, arriving. Feel the energy of arriving. It's a vibratory field. It's an energetic experience, bringing mindfulness front and center. You can know it as an act that's wholesome and empowering, and you can know it as an energetic experience. It's got a signature, an energy signature, an energetic signature. Mindfulness front and center. You say that to yourself now. Mindfulness at every sense gate. Mindfulness as a surround. You say that. And notice the felt sense of being present. How do you notice as a felt sense that you're present? So I feel very aware. I'm aware of the present, even far more so than what is arising in the present. I'm aware that attention, I am here with my ability of attending to something. That's how I know it. I can feel the awareness of the consciousness. My second one is I recognize that this is of this manifestation of being available is satisfying to me. It mirrors something that I really want to be available. And so I feel that is arriving. It feels the wholesomeness of it is really strong. What's the second one for you? Arriving, arriving. Almost every time I feel gratitude, almost every time, and I've done this Oh, I don't know, a couple thousand times. I don't know. And still gratitude. What is your third one? Knowing that we know we've arrived, that mindfulness is present here and now. We know it as felt sense. You know that your mindfulness is present here and now, and the empowerment of it. And you feel in your way, once you investigate this feeling of being available to the Dhamma. Available, available. What is the energetic signature of this feeling of available, this recognition of available, that manifests its reality, that you are available for what's arising in the moment, to be in relationship to it, to have choice as to how you relate, whether you stay with it or you move your attention away from it, whether you explore it or not explore it. What would be skillful in relating? What would be unskillful? How much heart quality is called for here, and how much protecting of the heart? How much you have choice, how much you don't have choice in terms of being with the experience? If it's a little irritation, you can take your mind away from it. But if it's something like a broken heart, you have to stay with it right now. Or you've strained your back and that back is just hurting. You have to stay with it because you don't, it's overwhelming the nervous system for now. You see, how do you relate? Not just the stay with the experience, but how do you relate? Said another way, you sometimes have choice whether or not you keep your attention on some experience and how much it affects you. But other times you don't have choice, but you do have choice as to how you relate. Available, available. Available the way that Buddha was available. For you, available to what? For myself, I start out with being available to life. I want to witness life. I want to support life as best I am able. I want to know life, so I'm available to life. Even if it is crappy, I still want to be available. I'm very clear. Secondly, I want to be available to the Dhamma. To see the Dhamma manifest in life. To have this understanding, these capacities that the Dhamma offers. For me, the third is I want to be available for myself as a practitioner. That whatever understanding, whatever heart opening, whatever expansion of choice is available, then I wish to be available to it. I don't want to miss it. Out of timidity or distraction by seeking pleasure or protecting my ego from being criticized, or I know what I'm about. What for you? Knowing you have arrived, knowing that energetically, knowing that you are available as best you are able, knowing it energetically, and based on experience, your wisdom and your compassion lead you to align. It's true, isn't it? So what is it that aligning with right now? The motivation for being available may be the very thing you align with. Or maybe a different language. Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. Metta, metta, metta. Wise aspiration. May I be clear in my aspiration. May it be wise aspiration. May it be a compassionate aspiration. Protection, protection, protection. Aspiring, aspiring. Aspiring, this uplifting feeling, being in the Dhamma this way, here now, here now. This is how we practice. This is a Dhamma talk, a Dharma talk about practice. This is describing practice inside the experience of practice. And we feel at some point that we are aligned, or we are in the direction of becoming aligned. We don't have to get to a certain point. It's that we are directionally getting. We're now specifically using versus that arriving where it was more directional. But now we're being using specific associative aspiration. It's kind of alchemy, really. And so we are in the neighborhood of available, aligned. And it too has an energetic signature, meaning a felt sense signature. And we notice that it's grounding in nature. There is a ground. We are grounded in our own awareness of consciousness. And the wholesome intention in that consciousness. You can experience it as a single kind of point, or you can experience it as a field. It will vary for most of us. Sometimes a point and sometimes a field. the dignity, because he'd been exploring it, maybe right there, very alive, that dignity, that innate dignity. The wholesome motivation, you see, just brings us to this innate dignity. Our gratitude can bring us to the humility. Our non-demanding, our just being available and not demanding, can bring us to our humility. You're best as I am able. You're repeatedly tuning into as best I am able while you practice, can bring you to your liberating humility. This first ground where we are inward preparing, we're inward staying, such that we become available and aligned with the Dhamma, and it seeps in us, and we have integrity in this aspiration. We're not deliberately being sloppy, but nor are we demanding. We are here in integrity. You are here in integrity in your practice right now. You never know what insight's going to arise, what thing that you're going to let go of. Can you feel this? This is being inwardly established. Upaska Ki, this wonderful Thai teacher, calls it inward staying. And from inward staying, we turn to knowing our experience through mindfulness. Because in the experience the Buddha has taught us is where we get caught, where we get entangled. And we start with the body. And the reality that in this plane of existence of the opposites, we know the experience, not abstractly, but through an embodied experience. There's actually a protein in our bodies that's everywhere that carries the message of all the felt sense to the brain. Feeling the earth element is grounding. Feeling the wind element in the form of breath as movement. Most amazing, you can watch your breath and see that your attention is still, even though the object is moving, the breath is different every microsecond. And yet the attention can stay still on it. This earth element allowing the knowing to be so still in the embodied experience. Now you've arrived in the body. Now you're available in the body, in the embodiment. You are available in your embodiment. When asked where the end of the world was, the Buddha said, in this fathom-long body, this embodiment. And we can notice in this wind element, in this movement, that it is knowing energy directly. Movement requires energy. Life requires energy. If there's not movement, we are dead. That is why the breath of life, or this life-giving, so we can start to feel the body, the physical body, in its energetic nature, in its vitality. We have a capacity of consciousness that allows us to feel the life force directly. We usually don't notice this except maybe in times of some great athletic thing, or dancing, or lovemaking, or seeing it in a child, how so much they are in vitality. So we have this capacity of consciousness that knows the vital body, this aliveness of the body, what would be called chi or prana. Life force. The animation, the body is animated. It's with aliveness. And because we are available, we directly know this aliveness. You, right now, can know this aliveness. And because we're aligned, we can know it in its aliveness for possibility. It's alive with possibility. Therefore, there's reason to be available. There's a reason to bring Dhamma to life, to aliveness. It makes sense, not as an idea, but as a lived experience, which you can know for yourself right now. When we feel our aliveness, this vital body consciousness being utilized, this humility becomes a reasonable response. It is so incredible, this awareness being embodied. The very subtle nature of the physical body. So incredible. So our relationship to it but naturally, out of respect, have humility. Just as out of respect, we have humility in relation to our teachers, in relation to the Buddha. That we are part of this unfolding in this aliveness, this vital body consciousness. There is a dignity that we have been fortunate enough to be being born into a human body. It's enough. All of our story about how it should be, if only I didn't get this. No, we're here now. We're in touch with the embodiment. We know there's stillness. We know there's movement. We're available to dance with this. With our vitality can be responsive rather than reactive. This brings dignity and humility. It's it's integrity living into the life. Can you feel this here now? This can be view changing in itself. And then where is the expression of this? We recognize the physicality of our experience, our embodiment of the experience. We recognize that there is a vital feeling of it, a vitality to it. And where does this get expressed? Yes, in the movement of the physical body, but also in the emotions and the thoughts and utilizing physical consciousness. We can see our emotional capacity without any particular emotion. You right now can feel your emotional capacity. Not in all of its complexity, but just as a broad feeling, just like you feel the physical body in a broad way, so you can feel your own emotional capacity. You have a dimension of your consciousness that naturally does this. This knowing naturally arises. It's like an ocean of possibility of emotions. They come as waves. We appreciate the individual waves a lot of times, and sometimes we would rather they were not there. Sometimes the waves knock us around, or we even get thrown overboard, or sometimes our isness gets flipped over, and it's a struggle to get back in the vehicle of our existence and that holds the knowing. We are not denying the challenge of being emotional beings. We're not denying this. But we're in relation to it from its capacity, not from our storyline about the various emotions. The emotions, the waves of emotion from the past and how they affected us, or the waves about our worry about the future, or what's happening right now, and the waves of right now of emotions. We are resting back in the knowing that this is part of our conscious capacity, our gift as human beings. So we can be in a relationship to our emotional capacity with humility, with dignity and integrity as best we are able. Is this not freeing in its implication? This is the freedom that the Buddha is offering us. Non-grasping. Non-grasping. But not dead emotionally. Just non-grasping. In these waves, these individual emotions that we have, that are brief or extended, that have regular patterns, that are rare patterns. What feeds them? And we can feel our thoughts. We can feel how thoughts feed emotions. And how the emotions generate more thoughts. And there's this kind of continual dance between emotions and thoughts. And it affects our physical body, and our emotions about our physical body generate thoughts, and our thoughts about our physical body, this embodiment generates emotions. And our vitality generates emotions. There's a lot of euphoria when there's a lot of vitality, but oftentimes a feeling of, what's going to happen to me when we don't have much vitality, or thoughts about our vitality. We're in a continual flow among these three manifest aspects of our experience. They are here and now. They are coarse in nature, but they are material and can be known as such. The calm and the equanimity that are awakening factors are generated or reinforced by this view of the naturalness of the relationship of emotion and thought to our physical embodiment and to our vitality itself. We are able to rest in the knowing rather than get caught in all of the drama, all of the stories that arise from past, present, and future. Again, we're the Buddha knowing the Dhamma, the way things are. And always alert to choice in our being available to life. Alert to what's skillful, alert to what's not skillful. Alert to our choice because we're available and aligned to choose non-suffering over suffering. Despite our history, because of our history, to include our history. When we run into our barriers, bow deeply. Sit outside the gate when the gates of the Dharma are not available. They're not open. Just sit outside the gate. There's no hurry. Of course, this relates to psychological healing and maturing, but it's not limited to psychological. The psychological is something that happens as part of this being aligned with the Dhamma. It's a view larger than our personal experience view. No matter your age, the spaciousness that it offers here and now, this Dharma view. We can be inside the experience at any age once we learn how. We can be inside the experience of the last breath. How do you feel in your physical body? Your sensegate experience. It can be a sweetness or a kindness. Gratitude, and just strong recognition, strong felt sense. In your vital body, this vitality that this consciousness of ours can experience. Right this moment, for whatever degree you can feel your own vitality, your own chi, your own prana, your life force. Can you receive this with dignity? Can you stay in humility as you're knowing your own life force? Can you see why it would be naturally arising that you would have integrity in how you relate with this life force? How much closer to reality this is than our soap operas. And thus the emotional body. And it's naturally creating these soap operas. There's nothing wrong with them being created. It's our belief in them, our reifying them. If only this, if only that. And thus the chain of dependent origination happens again and again and again. Thus we get lost in dukkha again and again and again. The same experiences can be happening, but in our dignity and our humility and our wisdom and our compassion, we don't get so lost. As view, as potential, as a view, an aspirate, aspiring view, can you feel this for yourself, just as you are, not some new improved version of you. You have to be here and now to do that. Available and aligned. This is the natural arising way of practicing the Dhamma.